So to this week, as you guys know, the first Wednesday of every month, or second Wednesday of every month, I should say, is always nutrition. So today I wanted to go through how to eat for optimal gut health for life. So I don't know, anybody, if you guys want to raise your hands, has anybody here experienced digestive issues at some stage in their lives? So I don't mean like one bout of diarrhea or one bout of constipation, but something that's been ongoing for more than a month or 2 months. Tends to be about 50% of the population will have some sort of issue functionally at some stage in their lives. And as I go through the presentation today, I'm going to try and emphasize how important gut health is for just overall health, but also for longevity. And then we'll talk about ways, or I guess the most appropriate way for you guys to make sure we have as much diversity in our gut as possible. Now, if anyone is currently suffering with some sort of gastrointestinal issue, just remember, this may not be 100% applicable to your individual circumstances. So, like if I start talking about fiber today and you've got some sort of gastrointestinal issue, and I say, you know, eat 50 grams of fiber, that might make your situation actually worse. So, I'm talking about this in generality or in totality. It tends to be of the most benefit. Does that make sense, guys? So, I'm going to be pinging out some questions as we go through this. If you have any questions, drop it at the bottom. But if I start pinging out questions, don't worry if you feel like your response is too obvious or anything like that. Just get answers in the chat, and I'll probably get Dan to shout them out if I can't see them. But today, I'll get set up. Can everybody see my screen? Yep. Nice. Once this goes full screen, we will get started. Oops. So I wanted to go through how to eat for a healthy gut for life. So, like I said, when we initially began this chat, this may not be applicable to everyone at the very beginning, because at some stage, I will start telling you guys how important fiber is. But if you are eating, if I ask you to increase fiber intake and you have some issue like you see very common in people, like small intestinal bacterial overgrowth or something along those lines, increasing fiber may not help you. At the initial stages, this is how when you have a reasonably healthy gut or you've got over past experiences, this is what will help you to maintain and increase your overall gut health for the rest of your life. And I'll touch on why that's so important as this goes on. I want to teach you what the best way to improve gut health and live in symbiosis, fancy word, with your gut. When we think about a symbiotic relationship, we have to understand, and I'll go through exactly what your gut is. Today, we're going to be touching on predominantly the large intestine. So when you guys hear the words "improve," isn't quite the word I was looking for. I believe it was "improve." I'm talking about the large intestine here, where the vast majority of the bacteria within your gut is. In previous chats, if you go back through the calls, I went through actual like gut dysfunction, certain things you can do for those. But today it's going to be just talking about predominantly your large intestine, where the majority of the bacteria is. But because that bacteria lives within us, we can live in symbiosis with it, where we have a friendly relationship with it. We give it what it needs and it gives us what we need. Okay. I like to think in a lot of the time with nutrition, I like to think of the gut as the root of the tree. And that's quite simplistic in a lot of terms. Like you'll see people like, oh, if there's sickness, treat the gut first. That's not always necessarily true. That is a little bit simplistic, but a lot of the time, if you solve a gut issue that is already present, a lot of other things get better. All right. So, what are we going to go through today? We'll talk about what the microbiome is. We'll talk about what disrupts it. We'll talk about lifestyle factors that affect it and what we can actually do to feed the bacteria, that the beneficial bacteria or commensal bacteria that's within our large intestine. Right. Why is this important? We're all in the longevity game, guys. So gut health has been associated with longevity in so many different ways. One clear way that you'll see it out there is gut health is associated, or excuse me, centenarians, so those who actually live to 100, they're trying to find trends that seem to be presented through all these populations of people that live into the later decades of life. One of the really common things that they find, and they don't find many things in common, is none of them have something called endotoxemia. So none of them have leaky guts. So like they have intact gut lining, and none of the bacteria from their gut actually gets out into systemic circulation. So gut health has been associated with in longevity, and it is one of the markers of longevity. So when we look at the hallmarks of it, there's 12, 13 even now, hallmarks of aging. Gut health is, or microbiome is one of it in of itself. But it also affects all the rest of them. So when you look at inflammation is one of the hallmarks of aging. When you look at mitochondrial function, when we look at immune function, they're all hallmarks of aging, and the gut plays a huge role in those. It's associated to almost all diseases. Now I say associated, so it's not the root cause of every single disease, but you can go into PubMed and type in any organ within your body and type in gastrointestinal, and you will find huge associations between all of them. So when I say like the root of the tree, you can find gastrointestinal function associated with Alzheimer's, with Parkinson's, with liver disease, kidney disease, cardiovascular disease, so type 2 diabetes, even cancer now. So understanding that this seems to be a endocrine system or a function within the body that has long-reaching and far-reaching effects on the whole ecosystem put together. All right. It can be the limiting factor in body transformation. Now, this might catch your eye a little bit more. So anyone who's ever dealt with a gut health issue or has dealt with other people with gut health issues, they tend to be resistant to fat loss, and they tend to be resistant to muscle gain. So if there's serious gastrointestinal issues there, they'll go into a deficit. They don't get the fat loss they want. They'll go into a surplus or increase food in order to increase muscle mass. And what generally happens is they deposit most of that as body fat. So it could be for some of you guys at the root cause of the reason why you're not getting the results you want. Gut health is directly associated with testosterone. That normally catches people. So it's called the Gehrling effect, where within the gut, if any of that bacteria gets into circulation, it does direct damage to the testicles and lowers sperm count and lowers testosterone levels. Okay, so this is why it's so important, and why it's normally when you go into nutrition or functional medicine, it's normally the most spoken about of the organs. And I stole this from someone else, and I wanted to give them credit, but I couldn't remember who it was. So whoever it was I stole it from, I appreciate it. So what drives disease? Genes. So there's a genetic component for sure. Exposome. Exposome being epigenetics. So you've got genetic problem, and then you've got epigenetics, epi just meaning on top of. So lifestyle factors. So everything that occurs in your life tends to play into some sort of into how we present with disease. So people will talk about genetics loads the gun, epigenetics pulls the trigger. It's a good way to think about it. And the microbiome as part of that. So that is how important gut health actually is for us overall. Okay. Yep. So what actually is it? So before I get into questions for you guys, I'll just finish this part of it. So we think about in the large intestine here, we're not talking about the stomach, the small intestine, we're thinking at the bottom, which is your large intestine, is a colony of bacteria, viruses, fungi, and archaea. There's over one, generally speaking, over 1 trillion microbes with almost double the DNA that our own human genome has. So sometimes when you think about it, are we hosts for them? Or is it the other way around, right? Because there is so many of them. There's much more of them than there is of human. There's more microbial cells in our body than there is human cells. And that's an argument that's made, not always holds true, but it's close. And there's a symbiotic relationship when we're healthy. Like I said, if we feed the bacteria what it wants, it tends to give back to us in equal benefit. So that's the way you can generally think of this ecosystem that's occurring within our body. And we have bacterial microbiomes everywhere. We find them in our ears, in our nose, in our mouth, and we found them on our skin. It's absolutely everywhere. It's different from your left hand to your right hand. That's how unique it is to you. Okay? And we have to feed it what it needs. But what actually does it do back for us? Some of the things that you might want to consider, it 70 to 80% of the gut. Of our immune system is actually located within our gut. So it primes our immune system. So whether we have a poor immune system or an overreactive immune system will be determined on our gut health for sure. Blood sugar control, huge associations to type 2 diabetes when it is not regulated well, but blood sugar control, weight control, vitamin and mineral absorption, neurotransmitter production, and hormone production. With a load of other things, but they're the main things. Okay. And now people will say neurotransmitters. I'll talk about this bi-directional relationship between the brain and the gut through the vagal nerve and how they innervate and speak to each other. So you might hear people talk about that you create like 80% of your serotonin in your gut. That's true, doesn't necessarily play directly on serotonin in the brain. It actually helps with motility. But we'll talk about the brain-gut axis a little bit later. So we generally have a lot of, like, when we do these calls, there's a lot of really smart people who have been through a lot of different podcasts, books, looking at the microbiome, looking at overall health. Can you guys give me something that you perceive that damages the microbiome? Now, I'm going to take one thing out of that. Diet obviously affects it. What other things can you guys associate that actually damages the microbiome? Stress. Caffeine, alcohol, antibiotics, medications. Good. Anybody else? Put in anything. Antibiotics.
Plastics.
Plastics is a good one, a surprising one. Yep. Nice. Oh, we've got smart groups, man. Anybody else? What other external forces actually affect our microbiome? Beer with Greg. Generally, yeah.
Pesticides.
Pesticides, nice one. Nice. Always a smart group. There is other things here, and these are obviously there's subcategories within these things. Because when you look at inflammatory foods, you could put alcohol in there as well, for sure. Especially excessive alcohol or beers with Greg will be an issue. Medications. Now, which ones? Antibiotics, anybody out there regularly taking NSAIDs like ibuprofen, wreak havoc on your gut lining, wreak havoc on the diversity within your microbiome. And proton pump inhibitors always seem to have an effect. So proton pump inhibitors affect the north to south mechanism. So anyone who takes stuff to suppress stomach acid can be an issue. Toxins is actually genuinely a major one. So consider in the food that we eat, for example, because we all hear about glyphosate. What is glyphosate actually sprayed on our food for? What's AdMed, Steve? ADD, excuse me. Not directly, but what ADD medication will do is it will generally increase dopamine, increase cortisol, and cortisol hormonally has an effect, which we'll touch on a little bit later. So ADD medication, it does, just not in a direct mechanism that I know of. And I could be correct. And if Jack knows, he'll put a comment in there, I'm sure. So what's glyphosate? It is a weed killer, it's a bacterial killer. So if you're putting glyphosate on your food and then you consume it, what do you think it's going to do to the bacteria in your gut? It's going to kill it, right? When we look at the antibiotics that are given to the animals that are not organic grass-fed, what do you think those antibiotics do when they get into our body? They kill bacteria, right? So, and I'll touch on ways you can circumvent this or find other ways, because I know a lot of people will turn around and say, I can't afford to eat organic or I can't find it. There is ways around it, and you just do it as much as you can. Stress and trauma, huge one. If you look at the some of the if you look at some of the literature out there on trauma, PTSD, or adverse childhood events score, huge association to functional gastrointestinal issues. So sometimes this is out of control, out of our control in terms of the food we eat and everything else. This might be a stress and trauma response that can be associated with it. Not quite something that we deal with on this call, but there is ways that you can look in terms of professional help if there's a traumatic event in your life. Exercise always comes back to how much, too little, too much. Right? Generally, how it falls, we probably, I don't know if we've all experienced it. Exercise-induced permeability, too much exercise really damages the gut lining. What you find, I spoke about this on another call. What was the marathon runner's name? I always forget her fucking name. The British marathon runner who actually crapped herself while she was running. Anybody remembers, please put it in the chat. That's exercise-induced permeability. So massive amounts of exercise can cause issues. And then we obviously have infection. Like post-infection IBS is very, very common. Paula Radcliffe, thank you, Dan. Every British person remembers that story. So post-infection IBS is a serious issue that can cause insults to our microbiome. And there's other stuff within there. These are just some of the things that I thought would be of most poignant to us and ways that we can look to minimize the damage that is actually done. I believe Jack put something in there. I'll come back to it in a sec in terms of ADD medication. So, symptoms. More in the chat here, please. What might some of the symptoms be for a imbalanced microbiome? So, I'll take away one again. The standard IBS things, right? So, bloating, distension, constipation, diarrhea, all those myriad of different symptoms that we tend to see in functional gastrointestinal issues. What other symptoms do we find? Think extra gastrointestinal. So, what happens outside of the gastrointestinal system that tend to be symptoms that there's something wrong going, there's something going wrong? Yo, he's getting them all. Fatigue is a big one. Cramps, yeah, of course, definitely. High blood pressure, food reactions, food sensitivities, headaches, brain fog. Jack's making a really good point here. Lots of different symptoms. Doesn't, and you can have people who have a gastrointestinal issue that don't actually present with gastrointestinal symptoms. One of the major things that we tend to see of extra gastrointestinal symptoms is depression, anxiety, right? So I'll come back to a couple of them. So autoimmunity, not necessarily a symptom, more of a diagnosis. There's a lot of autoimmune diseases that are associated with gastrointestinal issues. Chicken or egg, right? Listen, functional nutrition would argue it's the root cause of a lot of them. That's up for debate. Depression, obesity, diabetes, outside of that, joint and skin are real issues. So, Jack put in the chat, low T is genuinely associated with it now. rashes, eczema. When you look at psoriasis, rosacea, these all tend to be really serious issues. And the high cholesterol is a funny one. So elevated. So when we have these bacteria within our gut, if they get into circulation, does anybody know who they actually get? Jack, you're not allowed to answer, right? Does anybody know how they get carried around the body? So if we get LPS or lipopolysaccharides in our small intestine, large intestine, and they get into circulation, they get carried around the body by a certain molecule. I don't know if anyone's going to get it, but just make a guess. Quick, it's associated to cholesterol. Nobody. It's carried around by LDL. So it makes me wonder sometimes, not always, right? If LDL is there protectively to make sure that this really inflammatory molecule is not free to roam throughout our blood system, do we have to aggressively lower it with medication? Maybe it's a protective mechanism. The body doesn't do anything by mistake. So if you have these gastrointestinal issues with high LDL, is it actually an issue with the LDL, or is the LDL protective there? I look at LDL as a tag for HDL to come and clear it out. It finds damage or inflammation, and the HDL comes to remove it. Right. What are they finding in calcium buildup within the arteries? In autopsies, they're finding bacteria from the gut. So it's association to cardiovascular disease and high blood pressure. But these are the major things, right? If you're struggling to lose body fat, if you've got uncontrolled blood sugar, if you have unresponsive depression, if you have wandering joint pain, IBS, autoimmunity, these are all signs and symptoms that you have something bad going on within the gut that you need to address. Now, doom and gloom, let's calm down a little bit and actually let's find a solution, right? And people will, I don't know if people will argue this point with me. I know there's a lot of people who are on carnivore, a lot of people who avoid increasing fiber intake, but it may be for particular reasons, which we'll try and touch on. How do we increase the abundance and the diversity within the gut? Is fiber. Like the beneficial bacteria within our gut do not tend to feed off fat, and they do not tend to feed off amino acids or protein. They tend to feed off soluble fiber and what are called prebiotics, which is a type of fiber. Okay? They directly feed gut bacteria, and in response to that, they release these postbiotics that have positive health implications throughout the body. Does anybody here, because you all track calories, protein, fat, most of you, fat and carbohydrates. Does anybody actually know how much fiber they take in a day? Anybody? I'm going to take that as a no. Nobody knows how
No.
much fiber they take in. Go
No, but
ahead.
Greg, what is your tips to do that if you're eating mostly carnivore diet? You know, I try to eat meats and fruits, right? But there's not a lot of fiber in meats or fruits. I mean, some in fruits, but.
Yeah, no, don't get me wrong. There is some in fruit. But my advice would either to be to incorporate, and it depends why you're not eating vegetables within your diet, right? Is it that they cause you actual gastrointestinal issues, or is it that you just don't find the room for them? So that would be, I guess, the argument there. And we'll touch on ways that you can increase fiber as well. But so you, if you're not tracking it, then you don't necessarily know where it is now or how to increase it. But knowing how much you're actually having is quite important. Does anyone else actually know how much they're eating?
How much fiber is in like sauerkraut and kimchi and stuff like that? Quite a bit.
Directly, I couldn't tell you actually, Spencer. So I appreciate the question. I don't know off the top of my head, but when you generally think of high fibrous foods, you think fruit, vegetables, lentils, nuts, things like that, and whole grains predominantly. Now, you
Okay,
may
I do eat
find
quite a
that if
bit
you're
of
on a lower
I
carbohydrate.
eat those Barukas nuts. Those Barukas nuts that Ben recommends, I eat those. I eat fermented foods, but it's not a half cup of kimchi is 1 gram of fiber. Okay. So maybe I'm eating maybe 3, 4, 5 grams maybe.
Okay, so you have a general idea, but we're generally asked to eat 30 grams. Most people in the Western world, this may not be the case with you guys, eat less than 15, right? I would argue the point that eating more than 30 grams is of extreme benefit. Now, I always say careful with that. So if you go from eating 5, like Spencer, if you go from eating 5 grams to 40 tomorrow, you are going to be full of really aggressive symptoms that you're not going to enjoy. So there'll be a lot of bloating, distension. Like you might get gas, diarrhea, or constipation. These things might occur, but you generally want to treat this like a muscle. You need to train it to be able to tolerate more fiber. So I always look for clientele who are looking for optimal gut health to increase fiber as much as they can. And you can do this with supplementation, which we'll touch on in a sec, but I do like people to get it from foods. There's an argument out there that we need upwards of, in terms of variety, of 30 different types of fruit and vegetables weekly. Not many people are doing that. I don't claim to do that either, but I do try to incorporate different ones and get used to them. There's always the argument where, is it the six exposure argument? So if you expose yourself to a food more than 6 times, you tend to be able to tolerate it and enjoy it. That's how I've got a lot of different vegetables within my diet. Now, we generally want to eat organic food as much as possible for the reasons that I discussed earlier. If it's not always an option, Dirty Dozen Clean 15. I didn't have room to put it on here. But if you look at the Dirty Dozen, they're the ones that tend to be most sprayed with herbicides, fungicides, all those things. And they tend to be the fruit and vegetables that don't have a skin or a thick skin. So like strawberries, blueberries. And then you go to the Clean 15. These are the ones that tend to, even though they're not organic, tend to be the cleanest. Eating fermented foods, kimchi, sauerkraut, these kind of things can be of real benefit here. And healthy fats. People now eat a lot of saturated fats, and I'm not necessarily against that idea, but it's how much you can actually tolerate when we look at something like saturated fat. And if you already have a gastrointestinal issue, so if you have a gut issue, lowering saturated fat and increasing more polyunsaturated fats like olive oil, avocado oil, fish oil can be particularly beneficial here. Okay. And then we always think like diversity, diversity, diversity. How can you add different fruits, different vegetables into your diet and start slowly? So, like, don't try and go out and get 30 different vegetables tomorrow. If you're eating 2, 3, 4, 5 now, try and increase it to 6 or 7 of what you think you can handle. Does that make sense? Nice, guys. So, one thing I know I wanted to touch on that I mentioned earlier is understanding the relationship between our gut, or sorry, between our brain and our gut. We have what's called a vagal nerve that comes down from the bottom of our neck, runs down through the gut, comes out and innervates all of our internal organs. And it's this bi-directional relationship. So it's like a two-way highway of information. So if we are more sympathetically dominant, which means we're more fight or flight, then we are rest and digest, the brain will send this signal down through the gut and its organs that there is some sort of stress going on. And when this occurs over and over and over again, we tend, or when it occurs more chronically, is when it becomes an issue. We want to be sympathetically dominant when we train. No one wants to be sleepy and lethargic while they're training. You want to be sympathetically dominant. You want to be fight or flight. You want to train hard, get the extra repetitions done. But when it's over, we want to be able to pull back to this more zen kind of feeling of rest and digest. when we are sympathetically dominant all the time, generally what happens, what cortisol does, or what stress response will do, is we'll pull blood flow to the extremities for fight or flight. But also cortisol directly damages the gut lining. And this can be one of the limiting factors in people's gut health. I'm all for giving people more fiber and trying to target these things. But if you are constantly stressed, it is going to play a role here in your gut health, and it could be the limiting factor. So understanding that whatever mechanism that we're feeding the brain, whatever external lifestyle factors that are giving us stress, directly feeds to our gut to tell us that we're in a stress situation. But that goes back the same way. So it becomes this bi-directional yo-yo of poor information that leads to poor brain health, poor gut health, and back and forth. Okay, so it's really important to understand that breaking the loop may not be diet, it can always be lifestyle. But sleep plays a role here. Lack of sleep leads to increased sympathetic tone. Okay, so it makes us more fight or flight. It wrecks, it disrupts blood sugar, it disrupts gut health, it does everything. And we tend to get stuck in this vicious cycle. So meditation or breath work can obviously be a benefit here. There's loads of specific, there is actually professionally, you can get gut guided therapy now, right? That's how much the association has been made. All right. And like I said, people with high ACE scores, so adverse childhood event scores, people with PTSD, people who have experienced extreme adversity in their lives tend to have worse gastrointestinal outcomes. So sometimes professional help with that trauma can be of real benefit. Okay, so don't ignore the lifestyle factors. The majority of people want to jump to the other thing. I'll supplement with the fiber, or which I do actually implore people to do, is go and eat more vegetables. But if you ignore this side of things, it may be at your peril when you're trying to improve diversity within your gut. Okay. Now, these are easy ways, and I'll put together a list of where you can get all these different types of fibers from your food. So there is a list of the predominant fibers. So like inulin, if you look here, it's called fructooligosaccharides, galactooligosaccharides. Don't worry about the long names. There is lists of foods that have all these particular fibers in them, but it would have taken up 3 pages for me. So I will create one and get it sent out to you guys so you can start to pick different things out of different groups. But some of the things that can be used, like polyphenols, tend to be really beneficial. Polyphenols are these cool little molecules that you tend to find in fruits and vegetables, like in blueberries and things like that, that get activated by the gut microbiome, but also feed them. So it's this cool two-way relationship. Now, these two are the ones that tend to be most beneficial in people who are a little bit sensitive. Okay, so HMO just means human milk oligosaccharide, and it is what you think. It is a prebiotic that's produced in human breast milk that obviously is really beneficial at feeding beneficial bacteria, particularly stuff like Archimancia, if anyone knows what that is, that's present within the gut. And PHGG, partially hydrolyzed guar gum. These are soft prebiotics. So they don't, when you look at like FOS and GOS and inulin, you might have seen some of these that they get like advertised online. They're brilliant. FOS is the one that feeds the most bacteria. The problem with these is they can be relatively aggressive. If you're not used to a higher fiber diet and you go and you start to supplement with these things, you'll know all about it at the very beginning. And that's very similar with something like inulin. So if you're going to use these, start sparingly. Like a muscle, you need to train it to tolerate this fiber. So slowly does it, little bits at a time. People who are super sensitive to fibers, like you're literally talking, like you say to them, a quarter of a scoop, up to half a scoop, up to three quarters of a scoop. And then they tend to be able to tolerate them a hell of a lot better. But like dosages and all this kind of stuff, I'll make sure is made up so that you guys can have them if you want to start trying them. I know Designs for Health has one called Paleo Fiber. It doesn't have HMO in it, but it has pretty much every other type of fiber in it that can be of benefit, but start slow. Now, enough me talking. I'll finish up with a couple of closing thoughts. So don't, you'll always see on the internet, people will say this one bacteria is the one, right? That's not how it works. It's far too complex for one bacteria to be the one that's associated with health. Diversity within the gut is associated with longevity and health. It has associations to many different diseases. It's so important you get this thing right. Like, all men are seeking out ways to correct cardiovascular risk, and they don't look at their gut health, right? This could be the reason why you're at increased cardiovascular risk. This is why LDL is elevated, possibly why HDL is elevated, although you might see that as a good thing, but not in this circumstance. Diversity is the key to optimizing it. So, not just eating one type of fruit and vegetable, adding as much diversity as you can. Soft supplements are the best to begin with. Human milk oligosaccharides, PHGG, using these kind of things daily tend to be of the most benefit. PHGG is one I use if people have constipation or diarrhea or SIBO or any of these issues. It seems to be of benefit to most. And then diversity, 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 just to hammer home the point because I couldn't think of a fifth closing thought. But I hope that makes sense. And I hope you got something out of this that you can implement straight away. So that's a question I've got now for you guys. What's one, two things you can take directly out of this and implement within your diet starting tomorrow? Wow, John, that's a really good fiber target.
The blueberries have a pretty good fiber.
What's that?
Blueberries.
Yeah.
I could eat more of those. I
I
have.
will. I will create. So, like, I will go ahead and make a list for you guys. So I'll put it in, like, where I'll give you every single different type of fiber and where you can find it in food. Look into the Clean 15. Always a good one. There you go. One cup of blueberries, about 3.5 grams of fiber. Anyone else? What's one thing you can take out of this chat that you can implement pretty much straight away? Thank you. Diversity. You do not get diversity from eating different beers with Greg. It's a good one. It is a good one. It's very important for everybody. You will not get diversity in gut microbiome from eating different meats, whether it's bear liver, whether it's elk, doesn't do it.
I have a question for you on that diversity though, Greg. What's your runaround or go-to, or even like maybe time limit for people who've been on like a strict type of diet protocol or coming from a problem with their gut and they seem to be resistant? You know, like if they have a problem, for example, with fermented foods, and some people just, you know, they are on the, you know, they'll have either gas or they'll have like, you know, really, really bad stool, or even might have just be complete liquid for like 6 months. Like, how long do you hang in there before being like, I have to make some kind of an other intervention?
So I always think, and with diets, and I'm not against the carnivore diet at all. I think if people have really bad gastrointestinal issues and they use the carnivore diet, it's really beneficial. But I just, when people are dogmatic about it, is when I tend to struggle. So like a carnivore diet will get you to one place really well, and I do really agree. But then at some stage, you have to, I believe you have to reintroduce vegetables if they know what the actual problem was solved. So it could be that the carnivore is just plastered over an issue that's there. So is it just small intestinal bacterial overgrowth? So every time they go back to fiber, the same problem just reoccurs, but the carnivore diet just couldn't just master over that problem. That's normally how I look at it. So if they haven't got rid of the issue, once you start reintroducing it, it's just going to happen again and again and again. Now, is there some people, because there's also issues, I didn't touch on this in this, but like people have brush border enzyme deficiency. That can be a problem as well, where they just can't tolerate carbohydrates and break them down. So that can be a problem.
Any quick test for that?
I don't think so, actually, in terms of brush border enzyme deficiency, but you would normally think that it's intestinal permeability because they're first, then the mucus, then the lining of the gut. So it normally means that, like, if they're gone, there's some sort of intestinal permeability.
Quick question in the on the other side of the scale, Greg. So obviously for clients that are going to be in a significant surplus when, for instance, they're going into a phase of putting on tissue,
Yeah,
what would
I know
your
where this is
best
going.
takeaways and tips be for maintaining integrity of the gut and things like the mucosal barrier when you're pushing food volume very high? So obviously we know with some clients we've got to push their food really high with metabolic rate being very high. So in regards to tips for obviously we know gut integrity is going to be important before we embark on a building phase. But as we get into the deeper realms of really driving calories high, what's your best takeaway tips to maintain as much integrity of everything you speak about when going through a phase like that?
That's a really good question, and it's difficult to answer because if you're trying to pile in calories, the last thing you want on your plate is 500 grams of vegetables. Like, I'm exaggerating for effect, like, but it's just so much food volume at that stage that it does become difficult. Now, in that position, you might want to use supplementation to help. But I always think in circumstances like that, you will not have any problems if digestion is okay. So for you guys who are wondering like what digestion is, like by itself is actually just a breakdown of the food that you eat into their simplest forms. And I think sometimes that becomes an issue when we're eating a lot of food. So if we start to incorporate things to aid with that, so like hydrochloric acid, digestive enzymes, a little bit of bile salt, bile salts, I think that could be a benefit to offset some of that. But in terms of like fiber targets, I think especially when you get towards the end of it, you're going to be lowering fiber targets anyway just to get calories in, right? 300 to 400 grams of veggies per meal is a good target. Like, that's good. Really good, Lewis.
Agreed.
So I'll open it up. Does anybody have any questions that they want to go through? Any particular concerns with themselves? Anything slightly more specific that they're struggling with?
Yeah,
I have a question, Greg. With supplementation, so should we, once I start, easing my way into some fiber supplements, should I just like switch them up? Will that help some diversity? I know you want
for
diet
sure,
first, but
yeah.
supplement, switching up the type of supplemental fiber that I take. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely, and it does make a difference for sure. Like I said, like the what are called like fructo oligosaccharides or FOS, tend to be the one that feeds the most bacteria, right? But I would doubt if you're not used to a lot of fiber, start with some of those soft ones, and then like when t I, that's how I generally do it. When tubs run out of a certain one, I'll just rotate and use a different kind. And you can get some that have loads of different kinds in them as well. So I know like the paleo fiber for Designs for Health has loads of different ones in it. But yeah, that's generally how I work at Spencer.
Hey, Greg. I've got a colonoscopy coming up next week, so I'm expecting that's going to clear me out. Is there anything I should be thinking about to kind of get back going again? What's the bigger effect maybe on my gut that isn't as visual?
I wouldn't expect a colonoscopy to cause significant damage in terms of your microbiome.
Oh, but but it's the flushing out that they have you do. So I got a whole drink this Miralax and clear out that anything from that?
And so, post the colonoscopy, I would look to be using a combination of probiotics and prebiotics. As much as possible, just to help repopulate. Now, preface that with probiotics don't actually repopulate, but they can help with the balance really well. So I think just increasing fiber intake, using different types of fiber, if you want to use supplementation, you can, and incorporating a probiotic that has lots of like, so people, when people look at probiotics, we always see the bifidolacto ones, right? Possibly incorporating stuff like Saccharomyces boulardii or soil based as well. As soon as we're off the call, I'll put a really good combination one up in the group so that you can see it.
Awesome.
Because off the
Thank
top
you.
Of my head, I just in case we forget.
Thank you.
No problem. Anybody else got any questions?
I got a question, Greg.
Go ahead, sir.
I went to the doctor today. It talks about my chest pain I get occasionally, and that stuff. And they said something about have to do with the gut and things like coming up that caused the heart pain and that stuff. So like the thing that's the pipe, basically, and that stuff. What do you think about that?
Reflux. So that's what it sounds like to me. So if it's acid reflux, I know, is there any medications that you're on at the moment that might cause reflux?
No, the only thing I'm taking is my normal Seroquel XR and Strattera and that stuff. Those are the two medications I'm taking. And they my doctor mentioned use the take four colas docusites. It's like a stool softener for some reason. That's all.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. Like Metamucil or one of those.
Yeah.
So no real issues with taking the stool softener. So I would normally look in that circumstance to help with the digestive processes. Now, there is with reflux, people will argue the point, is it low stomach acid or is it high stomach acid?
Mm-hmm.
It is quite hard to tell. Or is it the fact that that food is sitting in your stomach for too long and therefore you're getting that reflux component to it? So I would definitely look to add in some digestive support for you and see if that has benefits. So stuff that helps break down protein in particular. You can start, I always preface this, you can always start with apple cider vinegar and see if it has benefit to you. And if the acidity doesn't actually cause any further issues, you can use stuff like hydrochloric acid digestive enzymes just to make sure that food's getting broken down. You can use stuff to soothe the actual lining, but because it's only a new thing, I wouldn't think there's any damage there.
No, it's not a new thing. I've been dealing with these chest pains for about 20 years. And
but the re if the reflux been going on for that long?
That's what my doctors are saying and that stuff.
So have you got any like gastritis? So did they say anything about gastritis?
No, I don't think so. And that stuff. The only symptom I'm having is like chest pain. And recently, it was really bad. It lasted for 12 hours. I had to go to the ER to check on it. Everything looks fine. They couldn't figure out what's wrong and that stuff. And my doctor assumes that it's like it's just your digestion, you know.
Do you take any ADHD medication?
Yeah, I do.
You said it's been going on for 20 years though, right?
Yeah, and I just started ADHD medication in December.
Yeah, because I know some of the side effects that you see with some ADHD medication there's a reflux component to it as well. I'll tell you what, do me a favor, Dom. Let's jump on a call at some stage this week and we can go through this in a bit more detail.
Okay.
It's obviously with something that's been going on for 20 years. And I know Jack put down in the chat, whether it's H. pylori, could be. But something that we probably have to discuss in a little bit more detail. Is that okay?
Okay. All right, I'll message you on Telegram. So.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks, Dom.
No problem.
Nice, guys. Anyone else got any questions for me that we want to go through? Oh, there was an initial question at the very start, wasn't there? So Keith asked a question. I was hoping to understand what would be a good approach of resetting protocol to gut health after being on antibiotics or other gut-damaging pharmaceuticals. Now, when you look at this, so if you're currently, if you have to go on a course of antibiotics, you, generally speaking, you have to accompany that with probiotics at the same time. That's number one rule. not because I said probiotics repopulate or anything like that. But what they do is they modulate the immune system really well during that process. And they make sure that as you, because obviously antibiotics will kill off all types of bacteria, that it doesn't allow overgrowth of bad bacteria afterwards. So I always say, like, number one thing is probiotics during the process. And then afterwards, I would look at just different types of prebiotics in order to feed good bacteria. I know I was having a conversation with Ben about different types of like citrus pectins and stuff like that. But I would generally just think diversity as much as possible after you've had antibiotic exposure will be the best way. People are probably sick of me saying the word diversity at this stage. Anybody else? I don't think, do I have any other questions? No. Has anyone else got any questions they want to jump on? It doesn't necessarily have to be around gut health. It could be around anything to do with nutrition, or if it's a training question, something you'd like to jump on.
I have one. Hey, Coach Greg.
Hey, Antonio. Are you okay, bud?
Very good. And you?
Very good. Thank you.
This one is regarding water. I've become a little bit of obsessive with it as of late. So the filtration system that I'm using right now, I tested it with, because a client of mine has a little stick that measures TDS, or total dissolved solids. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, like it tested, let's say 130, as opposed to a system like Zero Water, which has zero. Are there minerals in the water that are actually beneficial? Like, do you get is there enough minerals in water that you actually need? Or are you better off kind of taking everything out and getting your minerals from elsewhere? I'm not sure. Like, there's
that's
like
a very good question. And that's something, unless someone else knows the answer, that I'm going to have to follow up on. So I wouldn't be 100% sure. Ben, do you have any idea?
Was the question, are the minerals in water useful?
I'm sure they are, but I don't know if I'm not filtering out enough. Like, am I basically ingesting more of bad stuff than, do I just say, you know what, let's take everything out and, you know?
Yeah. So I would say in general, take everything out and just get your minerals from somewhere else. So like reverse osmosis just takes everything out.
Okay.
And that seems to be the most useful filter. And just make sure you're taking trace minerals. Like the small number of minerals you're getting in your water is minimal, man.
Okay, that's what I wanted to know. Okay, fair enough. I remember at one point you had put a filtration system, I think, on your, I'm not sure if it was through Instagram or one of your podcasts, but I don't remember which one it was. So some like countertop filtration system.
Well, so the one that I use, I'd suggest if you can afford it, a whole house filter is the one that I suggest. If you live in a home, get a house filter, because we get a lot through our showers and stuff as well. So the one that I've used is the Greenfield Water Solutions. So that's Ben Greenfield's dad. And so it's a pretty solid machine. And he has, depending on where you are, he'll find you a specific one for your house. And for the type of water you've got, useful. If someone doesn't have the budget, so that's probably $4,000 all in. If someone doesn't have the budget for that, there's something called the Aqua True, which I think we have an affiliate relationship with them. The company's called Water and Wellness. The unit is called Aqua True, and that's reverse osmosis. The challenge I have with that thing is it's pretty small. So if you consume a lot of water, it's kind of a pain in the butt, but still pretty good nonetheless.
Okay. Great, noted. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. We just dropped in the chat for you.
Nice, guys. Anybody else? Still got time. We good? Lovely.
Greg, can I ask a question?
Sure.
You may have answered this already, but I go into a health food store And there's 1,000 different variations of lactobacillus, bifidobacter, you know, like all these different probiotics. Do you have any, sorry if you already talked about it, if you did, we can talk about it another time, but do you have any guidance on how to approach that?
You're still there. Yeah, sorry, I thought you cut off. Yeah, so now you can look at specificity with probiotics if you want to, right? So you always put probiotics into three different families. So you'll say like bifidolacto, Saccharomyces, spore-based. So there's three different families. When you know, and they all, except for Saccharomyces and spore-based. Spore-based has some different strains. Saccharomyces doesn't really. And there's all these different strains. And people are always trying to find the one that does the one mechanism. But I think it's similar to what I was talking about earlier with fiber. It's as much families as you can get that will be of the most benefit. Now, the families do different things. So if you look at like spore-based probiotics, they've been shown to be really beneficial at killing off candida. They've been shown to be really beneficial around the gut lining and the immune system. If you look at Saccharomyces, been shown to be really beneficial in terms of like traveler's diarrhea, dealing with candida as well. And then bifidolacto tends to be around the immune system a little bit more. So they do have specific mechanisms in of themselves. But a lot of the time when people come to me for like digestive health, I try to get just a combination as much of all of them if I can. So like I know if anyone's ever seen like Dr. Ruscio does like a, what he calls triple therapy probiotics, where he just puts all of them into one and then gives them out. Now, sometimes people might respond badly to one of them. So if you give them in a triple, like in a sachet, and they paid $100 for it, they may be a little bit pissed off if it starts giving them work, it starts making their symptoms worse. But yeah, they all have specific things, each family, but like one strain of something doesn't tend to have that much benefit.
Thanks, Greg. That's helpful. So the challenge that I run into is like, they'll have like kids probiotics and like intensive probiotics. And you're just like, fuck, there's like 7 million different things. I'm like, I honestly don't even know how to navigate that myself. I can't imagine how someone else can navigate it.
But I do like how Designs for Health does it. They've separated all three different families into different probiotics. That's helpful. Yeah. Really helpful.
Yep. Thank you.
Okay. All right, guys. Okay, gents. Dan, off to bed with you.
Thanks, Greg.
Thanks,
Spencer. Thank you, Greg. Everybody.
Thank you, guys. Thank you all.
Can I have a question? When it is better to take the probiotics?
Say again?
When it is better to take probiotics? With meals, again, before meals, after meals?
Doesn't seem to matter too much. I generally will take them with meals or after meals. But it doesn't seem to matter too much when you take them.
Okay. Thank you.
No problem, brother. Thanks, guys.